and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Turned up to 11 today. Look at this. Jim Ward is back. We're full strength.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I was doing some mocap yesterday.
Yes.
They call it in the biz.
You were wearing ping pong balls.
Yes.
Yes.
It was like basically a wetsuit with ping pong balls.
Did you bring your balls today?
Yes.
Good.
They're
perfect.
Right where they belong.
All right, then. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number. I was talking about exploding. Yep, Representative John Yarmuth coming up at the bottom of the hour. Jonathan Crone, who is, he was that 13-year-old, remember, that gave a speech at CPAC, became a right-wing star?
Right, back in 2009.
Yeah.
And then now he's 17. And
he grew some hair on his nether regions,
so
read a book,
now he's
a liberal.
Yes.
Well, okay.
He basically admitted that he was just parroting what his parents told him and what he heard on talk radio.
Well, right. And more importantly, he's in Georgia. He's like, all you can hear there is Rush Limbaugh, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's what he was. Anyway, so who knew? He read a book, and now he's a liberal.
He got some critical thinking skills, and see what happens with that.
He's a great writer. He's really funny. Okay, Charlie Pierce, speaking of great writers, Charlie Pierce coming up from Esquire.com. And David Schuster, the most interesting man in the world, and Michael McDonald, comedian extraordinary, live right here in the studio.
Not the singer.
In hour number three. No.
Loved his work with the Doobie Brothers. You know,
sure. Sure, they ain't related, but they Doobie Brothers.
Ah!
I'm back to my rock jock days, everybody. Good morning. Okay.
We're going to do some radio puking for the next 3 hours.
Wow. All right, Jim, you missed all my Italy stories, but I'm in love with a guy from Goldman Sachs. It's a long story.
What?
Anyway,
guys.
You missed it. No, two.
Two guys from Goldman Sachs.
Look at me.
Two guys from Italy.
No.
Two guys
from
Goldman
New York.
Sachs.
She's a
okay, two guys from Little Italy.
Look at her. What?
It's a whole thing. Okay. Oh, look at this. It's a couple of, speaking of unsolicited testimonials, look at this. Speaking of cute little, prepubescent, well, not postpubescent, I don't know how old he is, 14. How old is Jonathan now? 17?
Yes.
Yeah. Jonathan is 17 now. Look at this. The kids these days don't do this. They don't write regular letters.
No.
On adorable checkered
stationery. It looks like
an
Italian tablecloth.
It does. Ironically.
Scott, right, Stephanie. Hi, my name's Scott. I'm 14, and I absolutely love your show.
Aw.
I try to wake up at 5:30 every morning. Oh, we must be West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
To catch your show. I think it's absolutely hilarious, and it's a nice break from the Fox News that I've had since the fourth grade.
Wow.
See?
Wow.
Indoctrinating them one at a time. let's see. I actually found your show because it started recording on our DVR all on its own. Trigger screams.
Interesting.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
We control your DVR. We control the vertical. We control the horizontal.
Al Gore controls everything. forever yours. Forever. Scott.
Wow. Well, forever in 14 turns is like till next semester.
Then he turns into a conservative when he turns 17. You know, well, who knows? All right.
I think the hormones are raging. I think he's in love with you. Seriously,
really?
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
I wonder if that came from Tel Aviv. I wonder if that's why.
Tel Aviv.
Scott, wait a minute. Maybe it was Scott McClellan. Maybe he's just posing as a 14-year-old boy. Maybe he's come around. So that'd be funny. I just realized I was talking a lot of during the Bush years. I'm sorry. I love Stephanie Miller. All right. Oh, now here's the kind of unsolicited testimonial that I like, and it involves a lot of ka-ching ka-ching for me.
All right.
And you guys, you know.
Okay. Indirectly.
Yeah.
All right.
A little bit.
Yeah.
we believe in trickle down a little bit here.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Stephen the Moops, who's this from? Let's see. Oh, an entire family. Dear Stephen the Moops, our 17-year-old got his birthday wish, and we have our tickets for the July 28th Sexy Liberal Show in L.A.
Awesome.
At the Pantages. We're getting close to sellout already. It's crazy. That's a big old barn, the Pantages.
Yes, it is.
Our boys are the official bagpipers for the Stephanie Miller Show.
We have some?
And we'll have their bagpipes with them. They just closed the show for the Indigo Girls at the Live Oak Music Festival in case you want an entrance or closing that will rock the house. We might have to add some bagpipes.
He's played with the lesbians before.
We may have to have Macaroni, the official rapper of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Sing along with bagpipes is Sean Connery.
Oh, perfect. There you go. See, we're just spitballing here, folks. Spitballing. Special celebrity panel.
This is how a show is planned.
Yeah, this is... This is how we plan everything.
Yeah.
On the fly. Just kind of. Also, let's see. Oh, our boys are worried they won't be let in because of their ages 17 and 14.
I think that's fine.
You're clearly already bad parents.
Yeah.
And that's what she says. We can also say we're the official bad parents of the Stephanie Miller Show. Okay. Yes, you are, since they often listen to the Sexy Liberal Tour CD. All right, so you know that the radio show without the FCC.
Right.
You know it's filthy. Okay, they've been listening to the radio show for years now, so they won't be too shocked. All right, well, they haven't seen the visual of the teabagging demonstration yet, but, you know. Okay, but they have interwebs, so they've seen it. They probably discovered it the same way I did when you show me things. Chris, what does that mean? Oh.
Oh, that kind of salad.
Oh, salad. Yikes.
Yikes. What kind of dressing goes with that?
Different kind of Sanchez entirely. Ugh. Yikes. Oh, Jim, you missed my story because you know what a dope I am. I was an ugly American. I asked for salad dressing the first night in Italy.
No, you don't do that.
No.
Computer says no.
Olive oil, vinegar.
What's the matter with you?
You got that creamy eye towel? Where's a wishbone around here? Okay, where am I?
It says Italian right out in the bottle.
Our boys play catch up on the radio show during the school year with the podcast. Oh, well, only $4.95 a month if you buy your
they
very
spend
nice,
money.
Which they will listen over anything else on radio or TV. They'll listen to the podcast instead of playing video games.
What?
Wow, but our boys are not happy about not being... They don't have cable TV. They're not happy about not being able to see you in the MOOCs on cable. They love you guys. Why are you such bad parents that you're depriving them of current television? Get cable television. They need to see us in every possible format.
Yeah.
Live. Radio. The podcast. 24 hours a day.
I want full newspaper coverage. I want magazine stories. I want books. I want films. I want TV. I want radio. I want us on the air 24 hours a day. This is our moment. Mm-hmm.
All right. Love always your devoted fans, Carrie, David, Riley, and Aiden from the Central Coast of California. Drive me
Cool.
All right. SexyLiberal.com. SexyLiberal on Facebook. Hurry. Those LA tickets are going fast. Columbus also nearing sellout in August. Seattle in September. So get it. All right. Oh, Jim, did you hear? This is shocking. Mitt Romney flip-flopped again while we were on vacation. Yes! So what's his name? Fernstrom?
Eric Fernstrom.
Mr. Etch-a-Sketch.
Yes.
Fernstrom.
I know. I can't even keep track. He went out and said Mitt Romney thinks it is not a tax.
Yes.
Yes.
And then Romney.
Mitt Romney said, no, it is
a tax.
It's
right.
It's definitely
and then,
a tax.
Oh, and then Reince?
Reince Priebus?
I don't know. Okay. Kenny Pick in Cleveland sends us this. Thank you.
Oh, dear.
All right. Okay. Oh, you forgot, didn't you?
Yes,
hold,
I did.
Please, while we deal with my producer's technical incompetence. Here we go.
The mandate was not a tax. It was a penalty.
If you can afford to buy insurance, then buy it. You don't have to if you don't want to buy it, but then you got to put enough money aside that you can pay your own way. Mm-hmm. Because what we're not going to do is say, as we saw more and more people in this country doing...
You've put tax penalties in Massachusetts.
Yeah, we said, look, buy it. If people can afford to buy it, either buy the insurance or pay your own way. Don't be free riders and pass on the cost of your health care to everybody else.
Governor Romney said in 2009 in a USA Today op-ed when he said, using tax penalties as we did or tax credits as others have proposed, encourages free riders to take responsibility for themselves rather than pass their medical costs on to the others. This doesn't cost the government a single dollar.
The governor has consistently described the mandate in Massachusetts as a penalty. The mandate was not a tax.
Okay.
The governor believes that what we put in place in Massachusetts was a penalty, and he disagrees with the court's ruling that the mandate was a tax.
Wow.
The majority of the court said it's a tax, and therefore it is a tax.
Oh,
they have spoken.
What is the RNC's position on this?
Well, our position is the same as Mitt Romney's position. It's a tax. That's the only way that the Supreme Court came up with the decision that it did in order to make it constitutional.
But it
otherwise,
sounds like Camp Romney says it was a penalty.
Right.
So I'm just asking you specifically, Republican National Committee, tax or penalty? Which is
it's
it?
It's a tax.
It's now clear that his mandate, as described by the Supreme Court, is a tax.
The mandate was not a tax. It was a penalty.
That is spectacular.
Wow.
Thank you, Kenny Pick in Cleveland.
Wow.
They just did a great piece on Daily Coast, I believe, on Kenny Pick.
That's right.
So, wow, that was.
And he dropped your name.
Thank you. That was
magnificent.
Penal
tax. Penal tax.
Sure.
It's a taxalty.
Exactly. Oh, that's just spectacular in its awfulness. All right. Let's dive into the right-wing world, see what's doing.
Dear.
Yeah, why not? We'll just get started. Like, you know, I'm just calling audibles here.
I guess
try to pay attention. What, you start radio yesterday, Skippy?
If yesterday is 20 years ago, yes.
Okay.
Hello, Mr. Marconi. Like your new invention.
Oh, You see, this button here, you don't say.
See, okay. This proves that we don't do planning for this show.
No. Yeah. And what has been your job with me for 20 years?
To follow along.
No.
Oh.
Wear something tight and push the button.
That's what I do.
Shut up. Okay, Greg Gutfield on the 5.
You're beginning to think he's not running against Romney. He's running against success. He's waging a campaign against achievement.
Oh.
His motto should be, if you're a winner, don't vote for me. I mean, this is what this is about.
It's true.
And he says he's expanded the definition of middle class to include poor. It's true.
Yeah.
Middle class has become poor under him. Equality through destruction.
Hmm. And she was chuckling because that's funny in some way.
In some Republican way.
There was some hidden joke somewhere wrapped in there?
Yeah.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jim, one of the two guys from Goldman Sachs that I'm in love with?
Hmm.
They have wives and girlfriends. That's not important now. Listen, in every love story, there's obstacles. Yeah, yeah, I'm gay. They're in love with someone else.
Perfect.
There's always obstacles in a good romantic comedy. I was saying it's just interesting. We all get stuck in our talking points, and it's like, well, the president has his way, and no one makes over $250,000. I'm like, do you really? Really? Do you really think the president doesn't want anyone to make it? One of his good friends is Warren Buffett. Really?
Yeah. Did you turn him?
Well, no, a hill turned him. He's like, you know what? I'm out. There's a hill. Let's just ride. Yeah, I'm like, okay, good. Thank you. We're both out. All right, Bill O'Reilly.
Mr. Obama opened up a new front in his battle against Mitt Romney today by going back to the tax the rich mantra. The president trying to force Romney into defending wealthy Americans by opposing tax increases on them. So say hello once again to our little friend, class warfare.
What?
Okay. All right.
The class warfare talking point went out yesterday.
Because the president agrees with the vast majority of Americans, the top 1% should pay just a teensy skosh more. Yeah, I mean,
by the way, if we hated rich people, would we have Rob Reiner here on the show?
No.
He's very, very rich.
Because
he makes movies people want to see.
I dare say Lily Tomlin, quite successful as well.
Yes, I know. I ask them for money every time. She's yet to bring a big bag of cash to my house. Yes.
Elvira?
Even a little bag
filthy
of cash.
Filthy rich.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Oh, and she's moving back to L.A., so I'm going to hit her up for a big bag of cash. As big as her bazongas.
Did she with get a couple house? Of them. Big dollar sign on the side.
No. Oh, yeah.
Deliver that to my house with a monocle.
She should wear dollar signs on her gazongas.
Yes. All right.
First, then she'd owe Gene Simmons some money because he owns the copyright to that.
By the way, our male listeners have officially gone around the bend while you were gone, Jim. Somebody yesterday had a fantasy about a three-way with me and Orly Tates and Elvira.
Wow.
That'd be a four-way.
You just burned that into my brain.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Wow.
That
would just be... a volleyball match for me. I'd just be in the middle. All right. 20 minutes after the hour, back with more Right Wing World. Next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves for a shock.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Steffi. They call me her. They call me Stephanie Miller.
That's not my name. They call me her. Yeah. It is the
same as the first.
Stephanie Miller Show. 24 minutes after the hour. That's why they had a big planning session. Should we call ourselves the Tings? No, I think Ting Ting.
Ting Ting.
Yeah, we need two.
The band's so nice they named it twice.
Yes!
Ting 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 Ting.
Wow, Jim is back and already perving out on Jackie Schechter long distance.
Yeah.
Jackie on vacation tweeted us a picture of her beautiful view in South Beach.
That's right.
Then we discussed how hot and humid it is.
It looks humid. The picture looks humid.
You feel the humidity.
But Jim was like, oh, that means she must walk around in a bikini a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We may need to send you as a bounty hunter to go get her and bring her home.
Sure.
Dog.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Jim, you missed the conspiracy call yesterday.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, we needed you for that one.
Oh, wow,
yeah.
I really
I was like on a 13-hour flight, jet lag, and I was like, what?
What CIA is forcing people to take some kind of medication.
That sounds Ron Paul-ish.
And I said, Jim's not here. He's still out having coffee with Orly Tates.
Yeah.
From the last time she was here. All right. Right Wing World continues. Sean Hannity.
President Barack Obama is celebrating more dismal economic news by announcing that he intends to raise taxes on millions of Americans. And as usual, well, to make his case, the president dusted off more of that patented class warfare rhetoric.
There it is. Class warfare. There's
we
that
go.
Talking point.
Yeah, that's... I, can't get enough of the repetition in right-wing world, can
why
you?
Why do they even form complete sentences? Just say that the talking points.
As long as they get them in there. Right. The word salad.
Class warfare, class warfare, class warfare, class warfare, class warfare, class warfare, class warfare.
Oh, I know. Let's take a break and have Rush Limbaugh talk about that socialist John Roberts.
The Constitution was written to protect us from government. The Constitution limits what government can do. One of the reasons the left is celebrating is because, we've talked about it, they view the Constitution with rage. Well, I'm going to tell you something. This ruling has just stood the Constitution on its head, because now all of a sudden the government's been told what it can do for the first time.
There are three branches of the government.
Right. As a well-known rageaholic, I resent that.
You're so well-known for your rage.
You know, this takes greater minds, legal minds, than ours. Gretchen Carlson and Steve Doocy.
Oh, God.
It's all about messaging. President Obama is an amazing campaigner.
Sure.
President Obama has been great at doing this simplistic messaging for people who are not looking at every detail.
Well, those people,
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
What? Yeah.
Those people are what they refer to as low information voters, people who just
people
get
who
some stuff
to
in and they think form of an opinion.
Said the people on Fox and Friends.
Yes. Uh-huh. Which, according to the study, makes you a bigger dope than if you watch nothing at all.
I don't think those low information voters are very bright,
said Steve Doocy.
Yeah.
Dar. Dar. And then he injured himself trying to eat pudding with a rubber spoon.
Yeah. Bless his
Ow! Jim, I mentioned the fact that in Italy, it's the only American news channel you can get. No wonder they hate us. Okay.
Yeah.
We were watching it like a comedy show. I was like, this is just horrible.
With your Lehman Brothers friends?
Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs, whatever.
Same difference.
They all run together.
John McLaughlin and Pat Buchanan.
They all have our money. Will the United States elect a female president? When?
Do you want a year?
I want a year. We got a full quadrennial cycle.
2040 or 2050.
That late.
Let's hope so.
Does he still have a show?
Wow. John McLaughlin still has a show?
Yeah.
Wait, what did Pat Buchanan say?
He said 2040 or 2050.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so.
I can't imagine a chick president. It's almost as bad as having a Negro.
No. I was going to get to the racist joke, but you got there first. Okay. Uh-huh. Even a chick's got to be better than a Negro, right?
Whatever, it's a black woman.
Okay.
Oh, whoa. God.
Pat Buchanan's head preemptively explode.
Wrong.
Oh, that'll be wrong!
Both of them sounded really, really old.
Wow.
That sound bite.
Wow-wee.
John
okay.
McLaughlin needs some new dentures.
All right, 29 minutes after the hour.
What? I didn't understand a word of that.
Okay, our favorite chuckly congressman, Representative John Yarmuth, next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Now that you've pointed it out, maybe
Stephanie Miller
does sound slightly like someone put a screwdriver in a pencil sharpener, but in a cute way.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. Oh, we just got an email from Jackie, Jim. It says, I miss you guys. I send big kisses to Chris and Jim, too. Don't know how big a kiss she means, Jim. I'll write back and ask. I'll inquire. All right. So the president obviously talking about the Bush tax cuts. And here we go again, right?
Yep.
Here we go again. By the way, one chart shows what this whole battle is really all about. You know, you'd think that we're so widely divergent, Republicans and Democrats. The reality, the fight's over how much, of course, here we go again with the top 1%. But for 99% of taxpayers, there's almost no bottom line difference between what the Republicans are proposing and what Obama is proposing. The entire fight is over how much the top 1% could pay. So we should talk to Representative John Yarmuth about that from the great state of Kentucky.
There he is.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stephanie.
So here we go, all the screaming and drama over, I mean, literally, 99% of us, there's no change, right?
Exactly. I mean, this whole discussion makes my head explode because... Because I mean the rationale that the somersaults I guess that the Republicans have to go to perform in order to argue against raising the taxes on these very very wealthy Americans is just crazy. I mean, this whole notion of job creators and you're going to stifle innovation and I think that chart shows basically what it means to the very wealthiest as well. I mean, if you're making $500,000, if you go to the 250 level and restore the Clinton era tax rates to over 250, if you make $500,000, it's going to cost you $14,000 a year in additional taxes. Now that is less than one employee.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, the whole idea that this is going to somehow change business people's habits is just absurd.
Well, that's what the president said. He said, I'm not proposing anything radical here. Anybody making over $250,000 a year should be going back to paying the tax rates they were paying under Bill Clinton. The American people are with me on this. Poll after poll shows that. You know, went on to say, cut middle-class taxes every year I've been president. We got taxes for the typical middle-class family, cut them by $3,600. And that's the thing. It's just they make it sound like he's proposing something so radical and unprecedented. And
no, it's not. It's totally nuts. And again, when you know the people who talk about reducing the deficit, I think if you restore those rates above 250, it reduces the deficit essentially by the current deficit by about 15%, $150 billion a year. But that's a pretty significant bite out of the deficit and without hurting anybody.
But that's to me what's so intellectually dishonest about what they're saying. They're screaming about the deficit, and the one thing that's going to add to the deficit, they won't do, right?
Absolutely right. We know that the Bush tax cuts, basically all of them combined, are about $4 trillion. That's what it costs the Treasury over 10 years. Now, that would basically put us into a sustainable deficit forever if we just let them all expire. The president's not proposing that. Neither Republicans nor Democrats are proposing that. But the fact is that this is a huge part of the deficit problem. If you're
right.
Looking at how to solve the deficit problem, you have to look how we got here, and that's how we got here.
Well, and you know, like clockwork, I can tell you that we're going to have this debate again because suddenly there's going to be all these callers to my radio show that say, hello, I am an independent small business owner who just stumbled across your show. President Obama's policies are hurting my small business.
I'm a small business owner with 5,000 employees.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to say this again, right? Republicans are going to say, the higher tax rates are going to hurt small business. Obama said 97% of small business would fall under that $250,000 line and not be affected, right?
Exactly. And they put out an argument which actually destroys their case. They will say, and I've heard them say it many times, 40% of all small business profits will be taxed at the higher rate.
Right.
That's true. And that 40% is earned by 3% of the small businesses. So basically what we're talking about is highly successful, highly profitable businesses that will have to pay the additional 4.6% tax. 97% won't. But that argument they make sounds impressive. Oh, 40% of all small business profits will be taxed at a higher rate. Yeah.
I love how I love how the reporting on this is Republicans dismissed Obama's push Monday as election year politics to make Republicans look like defenders of the wealthy. Okay, well, if the top hat fits,
yes.
The top hat and the monocle fit, wear it.
And the
exactly.
spats.
Exactly.
And the spats.
And your point is?
Well, I mean, you know, but the reason, of course, anything the president does, they accuse him of playing politics in election year, which, of course, has never been done before. But
ever.
Yeah. But, the point is, once again, he's not going to have the votes, right? I mean, this is, sadly, as many times as he makes this case, while we have this Republican Congress, this is likely to not happen again, right?
That's right. Every Republican in the House of Representatives has signed the Grover-Norquist pledge never to raise taxes. Now, at least a couple have renounced that pledge. I know Scott Riggle from Virginia has said he's not going to observe that pledge, so he's open. But basically every other Republican has said no new taxes ever, and so there's not a lot of hope that the president's plan will prevail.
Yeah, and who wouldn't be terrified of a guy named Grover?
yeah, why are these people, you know, that's what, and that's what Scott Riggle said. He said, you know, why are we listening to Grover Norquist? Who is he? And that's a great question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and here once again we get Senator Mitch McConnell with the same talking points. Here he is yesterday from your
This state. Is the same president who signed the very same thing 2 years ago with the argument to do otherwise would make the economy worse.
Well, he agreed to it because he had to, because once again he didn't have the votes. I mean, you know, but again, he's given tax cuts to, 98% of us?
Exactly, and 18 times the Obama administration's cut taxes, and Congress has cut taxes during his administration. But, my mission in life is to be Mitch McConnell's fact checker. that's all I do.
Right.
You're a helper.
Yeah, and of course you're absolutely right. They were. That was done because the Republicans were going to default on the country.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And they were playing Russian roulette with the American economy. And okay, so we extended them for 2 years.
I made the error of stumbling on Sean Hannity's radio show yesterday, and when he was reciting his Obama, all the horrors, the parade of horribles that he has inflicted on the country, and he said the first downgrade in our nation's history, and I'm like, because of the Republicans.
Right.
Oh, the president got us downgraded, you know, and as if we don't remember this last debt ceiling fight, right?
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, they're perfectly willing to do it again, it seems like. But, you know, I really do think that a lot of these first-term Republicans are having their own buyer's remorse with Grover Norquist. And I think there's a whole big chunk of them that are trying to figure out a way to get out of that pledge or just to have a mass protest. That would be very helpful and very patriotic of them if they decided to put the country first and not play these brinkmanship games.
Speaking of hostage crises, the president said this again yesterday.
Let's not hold the vast majority of Americans and our entire economy hostage while we debate the merits of another tax cut for the wealthy.
The Republicans essentially are going to say, no, let's.
Yeah, they do.
Right?
They do. You know, one of the scary things about this whole line of the very wealthy is there have been some focus groups done around the country, and when they ask these questions, you know, the Republicans don't want to raise taxes on people making over $1 million because they want to and slash all these other things, and people don't believe them because it sounds too evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
They say just people wouldn't do that. Well, they are doing it.
Yeah.
They're trying to do it every day.
Well, and speaking of which, Representative, before you go, I got to ask you just on another subject, because we had a caller yesterday. It was just heartbreaking that, you know, lived in a state with a Republican governor, has a critical health condition. And here we are. We've got like Governor Rick Perry. This is the latest story indicating he has no intention of expanding Medicaid or putting in place a state-based health insurance exchange. You know, they're obviously both components of affordable care. I mean, this is going to leave millions more. And Texas is already, it was ranked worst in the country for health care delivery, is the highest rate of uninsured in the nation.
Yeah, the Texas Medicaid threshold right now is something like 25% of poverty level. Mm-hmm. I mean, they basically cover nobody under Medicaid. So it would not only be a huge expansion of coverage in Texas, but also be an incredible infusion of money. It's 50-something billion dollars to Texas over the next 5 years if they participated in this expanded Medicaid. So, I mean, that's an awful lot of money that Governor Perry is saying, hospitals, you don't get to do this. You keep providing all this uncompensated care. We're not going to let you have this money. All the providers in the state. So that's going to be an interesting issue for him to turn down $50 billion over 5 years.
Well,
to say basically to all those people, in your face, you don't get covered.
Yeah.
Congressman Yarmuth, I don't, as you just said, I mean, I don't like to engage in hyperbole like evil very often. Yeah. But I mean, that really, I mean, this is just to spite Obama, isn't it? I mean,
that'll
these Republican governors, and people will die.
I'm going to kill my
people
constituents.
Will die.
That'll show them.
Yeah.
People will die. People will suffer. And the providers in Texas will suffer, again, because these people are still going to get hurt and get sick, and a lot of the hospitals are going to still have to cover them, not be compensated for it. It's going to jeopardize the economic health of all those providers. And there's an easy solution. And the other thing with the exchanges, the whole idea of states' rights, if he doesn't put the exchange in, the federal government will create one for him. So it's kind of like...
Yeah, and they'll scream big government socialist.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, absolutely. You know the only thing it means makes me feel better? Spooning with you on the phone. And hearing your warm chuckle. All right.
Thank you.
45 minutes after the hour. Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Stephanie.
All
Take
right.
care.
There he goes. Love him so much.
Yep.
Chuckly. 45 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Can we absolutely positively guarantee that it will give me an orgasm?
Yeah.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
After the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Yes.
And this hour of the Stephanie Miller Show was brought to you by themightyturtle.com, your one-stop shop to learn about scleroderma, sarcoidosis, health, and if you feel like it, shop for condoms and comfy shoes.
Oh.
Because
oh.
there's more to us than our diagnosis.
I guess so.
You gave that to Jim because you know I couldn't pronounce any of those words.
Exactly.
Except for condoms.
Which you haven't,
seen in
one.
A few years.
Yeah.
On the trail near my house.
Oh.
Okay, what? Oh, come on. Juanita in Louisiana, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hello, good morning. This is Juanita Walker.
Hello, Juanita.
Hi. I wanted to say, about the Medicaid being dropped. Bobby Jindal has already cut our Medicaid down,
mm-hmm.
and he cut out my 80-year-old husband's Medicaid. And now he's refusing the Obamacare, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was listening to the man before, and he said that the federal government will step in and help us out. Is that true?
Yes. If the states don't enact the exchanges, the government, if they're not ready, the federal government's going to have to step in, which, and then get ready on cue, Juanita, to hear your Republican governor scream about, big government and the federal government taking over everything. Rick Perry yesterday.
Well, we don't trust this administration, and we don't trust Washington, D.C., to be able to deliver health care in our states.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So we ain't going to have no health care.
Oh,
little
dumber boy. He announced, Texas will not implement the Affordable Care Act, leaving millions of Texans uninsured. I mentioned this to John Yarmuth. Worst in the country. Texas is worse than the country for health care delivery. And they are the highest rate in the nation of uninsured. More than 25% of Texans are uninsured.
Ooh-wee.
I believe Mitt Romney said that to Rick Perry in one of the debates right before they were this close to the tent scene in Brokeback Mountain. Remember that sizzling, homoerotic man hate tension?
Just spit on
you
his hand
of the highest uninsured.
I wish I could quit you.
Miss perfect hair. He joins other Republican governors across the country in pledging or considering turning down $258 billion Medicaid funds and leaving 9.2 million Americans uninsured. Mm. A new study found that states led by Republican governors have the most uninsured Americans. And I mentioned this caller, Chris, how heartbreaking yesterday.
Yeah.
She literally has a terminal condition and will run out of time. Yep. I'm blanking. Arizona. That has it.
I was just reading that.
Anna in Arizona.
I was just reading that Governor Jan Brewer is thinking about refusing the federal Medicaid.
Yeah, and people, they will run out of time and they will die.
Yep.
Jerry in Lawrence, Massachusetts says, Steph, I was watching your show on Current yesterday because I was too lazy to get off my couch and download the podcast.
There's that.
$4.95 a month by your advance. Gling. Okay. When I heard Anna's story, I highly recommend Anna that she move to Massachusetts. Oh, I see. You mean where some governor at some point put in something. Since she is diabetic, she is immediately eligible for Medicaid in this state. It would be effective the day she applies, and they expedite the process if the patient has a pre-existing condition. My state also has the best hospital for diabetes care, Massachusetts General. Hooray for Romney Care. P.S. saw both Boston sexy liberals. They were awesome. Isn't that something? Hmm. And Romney's running against that.
How can you run against that? I mean, it's very successful, and you put it in there. So why are you running against it? I don't...
Because this is the Republican Party
today. Exactly.
Okay. Stephanie in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Steph.
Hey, don't go away like that again, because I've had to put myself in a self-induced coma after 3 days of Morning Joe.
don't go back to Morning Joe. Stick with,
no, I won't.
Stick with the Fugal Sand Crystals. All right, go ahead.
And you know, they had a Tea Party rally down here in Cornville, and they wouldn't let me ask any questions. And I asked the guy after they threw, I said, why do you, I raised my hand, I was being polite. He said, you did not look like the type of person that would ask the kind of question that we needed to be asked. And so I said, well, can I ask you it now? And I was telling him about the, you know, explaining about, asking him about health care, you know, and if they take it away, what's going to happen to all the people? He was saying, first of all, he said, we need to get the Constitution straight, because it was never meant to be for anyone who wasn't born during the time it was written. Nobody was supposed to piggyback on it. So he said, so he got fired from being a high school teacher because he was teaching the kids this. So I said, so what you're saying is the Constitution is only written for the 100,000 people that was alive. He said, yes. But the sad part about it, he said, him and Mr. Joe Walsh, our wonderful guy down here.
Oh, don't get me started.
That if Romney gets in, they're also going to take away, they're going to work on taking away the mandate that hospitals have to treat people whether they have insurance or not. And if people die, he said, so be it, because it was never meant for the Constitution, it was never meant for everybody to hit on to it.
Wow. That took my breath away.
Wow.
That felt like when I got hit in the stomach with a basketball during a dodgeball.
When Carol Fisher threw
John Comstock. Get the story straight.
Sorry.
Okay.
Carol Fisher pushed you into the bushes.
We were
used basketballs and dodgeballs.
I know.
You're supposed to.
I know. Because we were on a budget. We ran out of regular balls, we used a basketball.
You didn't use dodgeballs for dodgeball?
You don't forget that easily. Just like phone call.
Just a cannonball.
A big rock. Big bocce ball. Yeah.
Used a boulder instead. Hi, Tracy in Oregon, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Good morning. You know, I'm sorry. Respectfully, Republicans are liars.
Oh, dear.
I live in Oregon State. We've had Oregon Health Plan, a public health plan, for over 10 years. Our exchanges, insurance exchanges, are up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Our state agencies are coordinating to provide preventative care for emergency care, for senior care, for kids without care. They're all covered.
Right.
We
see,
also...
like it's a good thing.
Yeah, in a special election in 2010, now this was a special election, we revamped our state tax structure. We raised corporate taxes, we raised business taxes, we raised income taxes on those making more than, couples making more than $250K. We did it. Oregon didn't crumble into the Pacific Ocean.
No, I was just there in January for Sexy Liberal. It's lovely.
Yes, and one last point. We have the second highest minimum wage in the nation.
Mm.
And you know something? Public health care, honestly, the reason that Republicans are against it is because of what is provided within the plan. And they are so against, here's the A word, abortion, that they're willing to railroad care for kids and care for seniors and preventative care that would keep people out of the hospitals.
Yep.
You know, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Oregon has for years had the most liberal care for women.
Yeah. Well,
And I'm so glad that I have this example, and I cannot believe that people like Anna are dying because...
Yes. I mean, that's what I mean. It's just, I don't mean to turn this into politics. There are just real people that is a human being. You should go, well, that's not... I feel sorry for these people. They're desperate that live in states with Republican governors that to make a political point...
So Oregon's a Stalinist hellhole.
Yes, was her point. Yeah. Thank you, Jim. Jim's back and paying attention. Good. All right. Awesome. Jonathan Crone. He's the former 13-year-old White Wing star. Read a book. Grew up. Is a liberal now.
Yep.
58 minutes after the hour.
Mission
accomplished. Yeah. 17 years old. 58 minutes after the hour. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Back from vacation, full strength. Voice CD Jim Ward in the hizzy. Executive producer Chris LeBoy. Me, Stephanie Miller. You can email us all at stephaniemiller.com. Check it out. All right. We have a big show. We have Charlie Pierce coming up, David Schuster, and Michael McDonald, the comedian, yep, live in studio here in hour number three on the big show. Very, very exciting. All right. We were talking about Jonathan Crone yesterday. He was the right-wing child star. He wrote a really hilarious piece called I Was a Right-Wing Child Star. At 13, I gave a speech at CPAC. 4 years later, I renounced conservatives, and they attacked me for it. He joins us now. Good morning, Jonathan. Good. Thank you. You've been tweeting like crazy about this. You kids are good at that sort of thing. Thank you.
Well, it's not that I plan to be tweeting this much. I didn't plan for there to be this much of a fanfare about it, but you know, I've been doing what I can.
Well, by the way, this piece is you're a very funny writer. You said you were like the conservative, yeah, Macaulay Culkin, except you've never had a drug problem or dated Mila Kunis, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, I really was. It was a huge thing when I spoke at CPAC, and I really didn't expect for it to be that big. I just I'd written this self-published book, and I'd asked the organizers if I could have a speaking spot, and they actually gave it to me. And so, I was really surprised when that happened, and when I was at CPAC, and it became a huge deal, and people started wanting to get me on shows and so on and so forth. So I didn't realize it was going to be that big of a deal.
I think we have to come clean, Chris. I'm pretty sure we played a clip of it and probably mocked you mercilessly in your absence. But
It's okay. Yeah.
You have a great sense of humor about it. I mean, you make one of the points we make all the time. You say you grew up in Georgia where conservative ideologues dominated. That's all you ever heard, right? Mm-hmm. From the time you were how old?
Yeah, from the time I was about, I guess, 7, 8 years old is when I started actually listening to, what was on the radio. I mean, I didn't understand it, but I heard it, and I started remembering what I was hearing. And so, that's really when I started. The good thing is, I mean, I think that with age, people grow out of it, and they hear other things. And so it really helped me. The more I heard and the more I learned, I think I matured a bit. No. And I think with that time, that's kind of where I got my sense of humor for all this. And, I'm going to, hopefully keep writing more humorous pieces and so on and so forth.
When you were 13, did the words that you were, espousing, did it make sense to you, or were you just parroting what you had heard from other people?
No, I think to an extent I thought I knew what I was talking about, mm-hmm, but I really didn't. I wasn't mature enough or really, I guess I really hadn't thought it through enough,
right,
or was able to think it through,
Right.
I love what you wrote about it now. Come on, I was 13 when I was regurgitating these talking points. What does a kid who's never paid a tax bring to the table in a conversation about the burden of taxes? What does a healthy child know about people who can't afford health care because of pre-existing conditions? That stuff that I just think is so self-aware. And as you say, you actually don't consider yourself a liberal now, right?
No, I don't want to consider myself anything. I've had a horrible time calling myself an ideology, and I really don't feel that makes a whole lot of sense. And I mentioned that in the piece as well. I really don't think that calling yourself and identifying yourself and, binding yourself to one side of the political spectrum makes a whole lot of sense, because it puts you into this little bubble that you can't move beyond, because you have to agree to a lot of what that ideology says. Now, there is some flexibility in certain cases, but I think that you're much more flexible and you're able to have your own thing if you just kind of don't identify with an ideology and let yourself think for yourself. That's mm-hmm. what politics is about. Mm-hmm. Politics is about, finding out what's best for the country, not what's best for your political ideology or political party or so on and so forth. It's what's best for everybody.
Jonathan, talk about what happened. So Politico released an interview in which you announced you weren't conservative anymore, and you say, since then I've been treated by the political right with all the maturity of schoolyard bullies.
Right.
The Daily Caller wrote a piece talking about your thick-rimmed glasses. And you say, these are not adults leveling serious criticism. These are scorned right-wingers showing all the maturity of a little boy. No wonder I fit in so well when I was 13. Have you been surprised by the ferocity of the way the right has turned on you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to ask the question. I mean, I wasn't surprised that there were people who were, you know, going to say things about me. I've had people say mean things about me before, but I didn't know there was going to be this vicious. Because especially some of these people I actually knew, like some people that made fun of me on Fox, I actually knew some of those people. And they were nice to me. And they were very nice to me, you know. And some of them had been my contacts at Fox, you know, when I'd go there and I was on a show with them, and they would show me around, so on and so forth. So some of these people were very nice to me, and like one of them, you know, on television, he even mentioned that and said that he bought it and that I was duping them and I was trying to pull a scheme or something. And then that same guy went on there and said that I'm totally serious about this. He quoted philosophy. Why would you quote philosophy when you're 17? What's wrong? There's something wrong with that. That's not right.
Oh my God! Like,
wow.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it's true with philosophy being used by 17-year-olds, and I'm like. Okay. Well, whatever. That's
you've obviously read entirely too many books for their liking.
apparently, but the most vicious ones, like I had said, were from the Daily Caller. That the piece you mentioned was the third one they wrote about me. They wrote three. They wrote entire three in 2 days about me.
Wow.
And the first one was the one that got the most attention from most people, because it was the one in which they used a lot of language that I probably can't mention over the air.
Yeah. I mean, the gist of them seemed to kind of be like, whatever, Poindexter, whatever, you pointy-headed little liberal.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. I was just surprised that the Daily Caller, like, that none of the editors were, like, trying to apologize for the fact that they had a bunch of reporters going on, and like, especially the first two pieces, and didn't say, yeah, these are hit pieces, and we shouldn't have published them. But nobody ever had any problem with them publishing those first two pieces, which were just hit pieces. They were not opinion pieces. They were called right. reporting pieces. And I was surprised that none of the reporters have had any apologies. They went on Twitter and made fun of me again. And I just am like, what is wrong with that? I don't know what the problem is with that. Yep. But it makes me laugh more.
Jonathan, welcome to my world, my friend. I see Newt Gingrich hailed you as a voice for your generation of hope for America. I'm guessing now you're frankly a disappointment, frankly.
I haven't heard from Newt Gingrich or from any of the political right on this. None of them have asked me on their shows. None of them have wanted to talk to me and hear my side, but it's okay. You know, my favorite thing, though, is actually there are a bunch of people on the right who have started to go, and you can see this on Twitter, who's Jonathan? I never heard of him.
Right.
I've never heard of that kid before.
Well, and
you would know better. We don't remember him.
Yeah, you write. Well, as you write, you say, you know, so this is what the story boils down to. A 17-year-old has different opinions than he did when he was 13. You said, I would love it if a bunch of angry right-wingers stopped saying stupid things about me. I also want a six-pack, a mansion in the Hamptons, and a beautiful woman with cans the size of my head. None of those things are going to happen. You're just a typical 17-year-old.
You might get a mansion with girls with cans the size of your head. That may happen. Don't sell yourself short.
Thank you. There was a, you know, I think that it's all about what you do with your life and what you do. And I said this in there too. You know, what I do with my life and how I am should just be what I want to do with my life, and it shouldn't be just a bubble of having talked every day about how I change my political views, and that's all I want to be. I don't see part of the reason I did this was because I was extremely tired of people putting me into this bubble of you're that kid who gave that speech 4 years ago, and that's all you can be.
And that,
that's really tiring.
That defines you for the rest of your life. Oh, God forbid. If I was defined as. Well, I was when I was 13. I'd be screwed.
It's horrible. And there are people who, like, who, and even some on the left who didn't think that I was doing this for, you know, for actual valid reasons. And even after the piece, who thought that I was doing this for monetary reasons. And I told these people, yes,
I'm doing it for all the money that I'm not getting, because I am getting so much money from doing things that don't pay.
Yeah, Jonathan, I relate to you more than you know. You know, my dad ran with Barry Goldwater in 1964, and it's because I see here that your father calls you a flaming liberal, because, you know, people in my family, some members are still very Republican, so I feel your pain.
Yeah, no. My parents love me, though. They've been respectful of me. I don't know why he called me a flaming liberal. I thought it was funny, so I put that in my bio, and he's good with it. He has no.
Yeah. Well, it's hilarious. I just got some letters that I apparently wrote when I was a kid, so I know. But because I came from this Republican family, and I literally, there was a paper I was writing, and I probably was about your age then, about 12 or 13, and I said something about, my dad's a great man, which is true. And I said, but, you know, I don't know if he's as great as Richard Nixon or John Travolta. And I wrote this post-Watergate, I guess. I was citing them as, like, the biggest, like.
Oh, God, Stephanie.
Up your nose with a rubber hose.
Yeah, so we evolve. Yeah, and this was pre-massage scandal as well, apparently. Yeah. So.
Oh, boy.
Well, Jonathan, great stuff. You're clearly a really funny writer. You have whatever your politics are or evolve to, you have a big future.
You're a great writer.
Very talented.
I hope to do some more. I'm going to be doing some more of those humor pieces coming up soon. So I'm gonna make sure, get those out there. And
awesome.
I
hope you'll come back. All I recall saying, Chris, is I just suggested that you grow some hair in certain places after I heard your clips when you were 13, and I think you agree with me. Now that you've grown said hair, I just said, come back and talk to me when it's grown, and you did.
Bring on the can size of your head.
There you go. Jonathan, thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Talk to you again soon. Okay. Now I remember.
Yeah.
You played that clip, and I just said, oh, please, grow some hair on you. And there he is. There he is, back with his hair.
He's got a great future as a writer.
Yeah, he's delightful.
Yeah.
All right, 19 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
It's her political party, and she'll cry if she wants to. It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready for
Stephanie Miller?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. We were just talking to the delightful Jonathan Crone about Twitter. The kids are just wizards with the Twitter.
They are.
Mike, Rocky Mountain Mike, writes about Twitter magic. Rafalka, the Romney's a dressage horse.
Uh-huh.
Just turned Jan Ebeling. What's his name? Ebeling, the rider.
Yeah, right.
On to my Rafalka, so we've made it into the inner horsey dressage circle. They think that it's a tribute. They don't realize that we are mocking them. That's too bad. Speaking of unintentional comedy, did you see the mega rich donors lined up in the Hamptons? Did you see all the Thurston and Loveys?
What a bunch of douchebags.
At the Mitt Romney fundraiser in the Hamptons, darling.
Oh boy, where's my mic eye?
The headline is mega rich donors live up the stereotypes at Romney fundraisers in the Hamptons.
They all carried in bags of cash with dollar signs.
I love the
on
little
the
plane that flew by. It said Romney has a Coke problem over the David Coke sustain. He had a trio of fundraisers at the Hamptons, and they interviewed a bunch of people coming in. Stereotypes are us. Hello. A New York City donor a few cars back, who would not give her name, said Romney needs to do a better job connecting. I don't think the common person is getting it, she said. She said from the passenger seat of a Range Rover.
The commoners.
She said, we got the message, but my college kid, the babysitters, the nail ladies.
The nail ladies.
Everybody who's got the right to vote. What's that about? They don't understand what's going on. I just think of your lower income.
Really?
Wow. You don't... Wow. One, you're not as educated. Two, they don't understand how it works. They don't understand the systems work. They don't understand the impact. James, go. Drive, James.
Poor people are dumb.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, my God. Really?
Wow. My
I know some
God.
Dumb
I don't,
rich people,
really?
Too.
Isn't there someone working on a law that nail ladies can't vote? What's that about? Okay, you can pick a color. You cannot pick a candidate. You're a nail lady. Oh, Thurston, this is awful. Ted Conklin, who owns the American Hotel in Sag Harbor, told the New York Times that Obama's a socialist. His idea is to find a problem that doesn't exist and get government to intervene, Conklin added. He has his wife, Carol Simmons, nodding beside him in their gold Mercedes. That's right, Thurston, go tell it.
It's not a problem for us.
So, health... The awful state of healthcare in America is not a problem.
No problem.
He just invented the problem and tried to fix it.
Why can I just picture his wife, Carol, a.k.a. Lovey, nodding in their gold Mercedes?
Oh, yeah. Poor people should just die. That's their job.
Ms. Simmons paused to highlight what she said was her husband's generous spirit. Tell him who was on your yacht this weekend. Tell him.
No, she said she used the word yacht?
Yeah.
Yes.
Over Mr. Conklin's objections, Ms. Simmons disclosed a major executive from Miramax, the movie company, was on the 75-foot yacht because she said there were no rooms left at the hotel.
No.
Oh, it's like the story of baby Jesus. Oh, that's so touching.
There's no room at the
There's
inn.
There's no room at the inn.
I guess you'll have to stay on
a
yacht.
You can stay on my yacht.
Oh, God.
Tell him.
In a related story, Mitt Romney said that he has little to do with his personal investments because they're managed by a blind trust. I don't manage them. I don't even know where they are. Right.
Mitt Romney, for his part, said, if you're here, by and large, you're doing just fine. You think? The tickets were like $75,000 a couple.
That's more
that's just fine. That's a little better than fine.
That's more than that Obama fundraiser you went to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about those here. I spend a lot of time worrying about those that are poor. Oh, please.
You're a lying sack of crap.
You condescending bastard.
I don't care about you.
Oh, my God.
This is really all about the poor, this little gathering here in the Hamptons.
I have poor people cleaning my toilets right now.
Oh, gosh. If only that guy was there in Bethlehem with his yacht.
Wow.
Bethlehem is in the desert. It's in the desert.
Okay, 29.
Oh, my God.
Wow. In those days, I think.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
So his blind trust is run by Mr. Magoo? He just can't see it. Yeah. No idea. He doesn't know where it is.
Oh, Magoo,
see it.
You've done it again.
I can't see it. It's totally blind. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I was the first one on the scene selling erotic t-shirts.
Stephanie Miller.
Been farting. That one was not erotic to everybody.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. Oh, thank goodness for my FCC license.
Yeah.
I run things. Well, Charlie Pierce, you know, he's a very good writer, and so he knows even other language words for bad words.
You can write things on the internet that you cannot say on the radio.
I got to get my bleep button ready. Okay, here it comes. Yeah. There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce. Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, political columnist for Esquire.com.
Why is everybody always laughing at me?
I tell you, Charlie Pierce, no one documents gob terrine better than you do, my friend.
I'm not entirely sure that's a word you have to bleep, actually, unless you're being picked up in Ireland on satellite radio.
Yeah, that's
It makes him squeaky.
Yeah, it makes me a little scoogey.
Can you say that on the radio?
Charlie
Chris
Pierce.
Malloy doing his Charo imitation.
Yeah, exactly.
Just for the folks on current TV.
And by the way,
well, welcome home. By the way,
thank you. In one degree of separation, back? Guess who I was on the plane with on the way to the Miami sexy liberal?
The Pope.
Charo.
Really?
Yeah, I once did Chicago with her.
What is she possibly doing for a living?
She was flying a plane, actually.
Yeah, she's flying. Charlie Pierce, great
stuff. I mean, outside of like collecting residuals from the 3,823 times she was on Love Boat, I can't imagine what she...
She was a Grammy-winning guitarist, if you did not know
and
that.
And she is delightful. She was like, oh, Stephanie, I have not seen you so long. Ay, ay, ay. And then she... What was that? The whole conversation. Okay, Charlie Pierce, great stuff as usual. You say when professional pundits talk about the Romney campaign's messaging problem, they generally mean the mystifying problem that the campaign has in establishing one grotesque lie on an issue in which the campaign and all its surrogates can stick. And as you call it, it's alternatively known as the Fernstrom conundrum.
Or conundrum.
Yeah, what's up with that guy, Charlie?
Well, actually, I know Eric. Eric and I worked together at the Boston Herald many, many years ago when
I was
a daily sports writer. And now that he's sort of on the main stage, I don't know if it's him or it's just a general issue of the campaign, but they can't seem to settle on one, like, lie.
Yeah.
So they're all sort of off the reservation telling whatever they want to say. There was no reason for them to get tangled up in whether it's a penalty or a tax.
Yeah, that was, I have to say, even for the Romney campaign, that was a spectacular collision, wasn't it?
Yeah, I do think it got caught up in being summer and the silly season. It was a little bit too much was made of it, but you know, it doesn't matter if it's a penalty or a tax. I mean, what possible difference does it make to the people who need the health care?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, we were just talking about this woman, as you say, quote, the lady in the Range Rover, who was speaking about why do they let the common people vote, essentially,
the nail ladies. Well, why do they let the nail ladies vote?
And you say, and then she picked her teeth with the bleached metacarpal of an indigent child and went off to get another cocktail. I mean, you can't write this stuff. It literally was like Richie Rich come to life, the comic strip.
How could they possibly allow reporters to go up and down the line of people waiting to get into that place and do these interviews?
Yeah.
I mean, shouldn't they be better at, like, you know, preventing the entire country from seeing what a walking stereotype this campaign is?
Right.
And you say, is it time now to point that the Dow is doing fine, the executive compensation is back where it was before, and the fact the same people who created the economy last time are still engaging in massive fraud and reckless cupidity. I mean, that's because you mentioned in here the disillusioned former Obama supporters among the swells. I met some of those on my bike trip. You know.
Well, have you seen the backstory of the disillusioned Obama supporter they mentioned in the piece? He's the guy who was responsible for the upgrading of the image of Chuck E. Cheese. I'm not making this up.
You're right. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Man. And believe me, as a parent, when I die and go to my richly deserved reward, my ring of hell is going to be an endless Chuck E. Cheese.
Discolored balls as you drown.
If you could take your children to DSS.
Right.
For abusing their parents, having parties at Chuck E. Cheese would be a major offense. I mean, the social services would remove you from your children
exactly.
if they make you go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Exactly. By the way,
I chewed my fingernails. It tastes better than that pizza, by the way. But go ahead.
Anyway, this, as you say, this may have been the greatest weekend of pure unabashed gob in the brief history of this weekly feature. Nobody documents what happens on the Sunday show better. The Sunday show is better than you, Charlie Pierce.
Well, this was spectacular this
right?
week. I mean, between Bobby Jindal and Reince Priebus, who just gets better and better.
Yeah, Reince.
I mean, this is what happens when you hand the entire party over to a guy who can't get elected state rep.
Right.
Which is exactly who this guy is.
So, and I was traveling, so I wouldn't have known that he said this unless you told me. Mitt Romney has to win for the sake of the very idea of America. Mitt Romney has to win for liberty and freedom.
America will not survive if Mitt Romney is not elected president.
How?
I spent a lot of time in Wisconsin when I was in college because that's where I went to college.
Right.
Marquette.
I never got drunk enough to say anything like that.
You say, how precisely are we less free if Mitt Romney loses the election, except for the fact that we lose him as an easy punchline for a while? Yeah. I mean, he didn't...
My freedom of speech is completely curtailed if he loses, because then I can't make fun of him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But the best, as you say, they brought on Governor Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, who proceeded to make a lovely gumbo out of himself, trying to explain Willard Romney's personal overseas banking practices.
Oh, it was unbelievable. He kept trying to change the subject. And to his credit, Terry Moran, who was guest hosting for... you know, polysyllables there on this week, you know, really wouldn't let him off the hook. He kept saying, well, what about the overseas bank account? And Bobby Jindal kept saying, but what about the deficit?
Yeah, yeah. As you say, if you're keeping score at home, the answer to should American voters consider the fact that Romney's hiding the equivalent of the net worth of the rest of his fellow citizens in banks where they serve drinks with tiny umbrellas in them is, according to Bobby Jindal, the deficit. Also, hey, lemonade stands.
He made some crack about the president never having run a lemonade stand. Now, I don't know how he knows that, by the way, and I haven't read Marinus's book yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, he probably, like, you know, the president probably sold, like, Kenyan Muslim marijuana at his lemonade stand when he
was kid. Of course. I mean, what else would he sell?
You say there is sticking to your talking points, and then there's clinging to them like wreckage from the Titanic until your body begins to freeze from the knees up. If Bobby Jindal were any worse on TV, NBC would be rumored to be hiring him to replace David Gregory. Tee-hee, Charlie Pierce.
But no, I mean, he's probably the worst surrogate I've ever seen.
Yeah.
No, I mean, beginning with his reply to the State of the Union and going right up through this weekend.
Yeah.
For a guy who's supposed to be a rising star in your party, he's got to be the worst surrogate I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yep. And then you gave us George Will on global warming here, which was really, I hadn't seen this either, but that was pretty stunning that he basically just said, it's summer, it's hot, get over it.
Yeah, see, he's got to really consider himself lucky that, like, E.J. Dionne doesn't carry brass knuckles or nunchucks or something, because he'd be dead by now. I mean, it's just not fair to be nasty to E.J. Dionne. He's such a nice guy.
I know. But
he may be my favorite Catholic.
By the way, you make the rather cogent point that you said so far over the past 2 weeks, 60 of Will's fellow citizens have been rendered unable to, quote-unquote, get over it because they're dead from the effects of heat. You know, which is, you know, that's the thing. It really is incredible.
The level of commitment they have to the idea that there really isn't anything to worry about on this is really astonishing to me. I mean, even the head of ExxonMobil is admitting that there's global warming, but he thinks we can engineer our way out of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. So
an engineer his way onto a spaceship to go to Neptune. The rest of us will be here. The rest will be here frying eggs on our knees.
Yeah.
Charlie Pierce, is Mitt Romney going to have to take a position on anything or present any specifics at any point?
I assume during the debates he will.
Right.
But you know, he's come out today saying he's going to strike back. His campaign is going to strike back hard against the criticism he's getting for all this offshoring, outsourcing things, and he's not going to be shy about calling the president a liar. Is this really something Mitt Romney wants to do? I mean, is this a game he really is this the field he wants to play on?
I mean, is he going to have to release his tax returns? I love what was the headline today that, you know, Romney says there's nothing hidden in those taxes, and I'm going to prove it by not showing you them. There's nothing there.
It to you, exactly.
It's not like all my money's in a blind trust. I have no idea what's going on.
I mean, I
am far more impressed by his $2 million IRA or whatever it is.
Yes, $100 million. Isn't it?
$100 million IRA.
Wow. How does that happen exactly?
Well, when you sell a bunch of jobs off to China, I think.
Yeah. It would be nice if we could see his tax record so that we could find out how he
messed up. He already said there's nothing hidden in there.
You know, I don't think he's going to do it. I think he's going to. I think he's going to stand there and say the hell with it.
Yep.
You got the two I'm going to give you. And I'm really rich, and you all know it, and elect me anyway.
So
shut up.
So he's not following the precedent that his own father began.
No, because his father's a loser. His father lost.
Uh-huh.
Mitt doesn't want to lose.
Okay.
He may lose anyway, but he's not going to lose by showing you how rich he is.
Yeah.
Nobody breaks it down like Charlie. Thank you, Charlie.
I never thought I would root so hard against a dressage team in the Olympics. But
un-American?
I am such a Spanish dressage fan right now.
Hey, listen, if the right wing can cheer Chicago losing the Olympics, you know, we can pick favorites in dressage.
I am rooting for the United States of America in every event except dressage.
Yes.
I love you, you communist, Charlie Pierce.
Thank you, guys. Welcome back again. I hope you had a good time in Italy.
Thank you, baby.
Was there gelato involved?
Oh, see, you're the second person that's asked her that.
Lots of gelato, lots of wine.
Oh, lots of, vino rosso?
Yes. See. A lot of, what's the one I'm thinking of, Barb? The B one.
Barolo?
Yes, Barolo. You win. And I had a couple
of... Wait, don't tell me.
I won today's installment of Guess What Mama's Drinking.
Yes. And a couple, and I had a couple of pizza orgasms.
It's not Zima.
Thanks for asking.
No, I don't need to know about that last part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I guarantee you didn't have the Chuck E. Cheese.
No. This was real pizza.
Yeah, Godfather's.
All right. Arrivederci.
Goodbye. Arrivederci.
That's amore. That's my amore. All right.
Oh, Charlie Pitts.
Bellissimo. 45 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-1-2.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 49 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2. This hour brought to you by GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting, the best way to host an online meeting. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Type in the promo code Stephanie. Promo code is Stephanie. All right. Oh, speaking of promos,
what?
I have a new hat.
You do?
Look at this. It's from Amy. Amy from Columbus. It's big gay dogs.
Yep.
It's pride wear for pets and their people. It's a bunch of big gay dogs on my hat. Thank you, Amy. Amy going to Sexy Liberal in Columbus, August 18th. Tickets going fast. Hurry. All right. Lorinda writes, Steph, welcome back. I'm glad to see you made it back safely. I'm embarrassed to admit how much I missed you. No, don't be embarrassed. It's okay. There. Everybody gentle. We're all back. No offense to John. He did a great job. Do you know the Seinfeld episode about Bizarro Jerry and his friends?
Yes.
Last week was like that. The someone with over 50 eyes. Tony sort of resembled. Tony was our board op last week. Torty sort of resembled Chris. Frank was a weird Jim, and you and John could be related. You both have that super dark hair and porcelain skin. Oh. Thank you. Yeah, it was. It was Bizarro stuff.
Oh, Frank Conniff. That's right. He had Frank Conniff in.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said. Who's Frank? I don't know.
Okay. And I know he had Craig Shoemaker in one day as well.
He's cute and hilarious.
Yes, he is.
Oh, and also, what did you do? What was our best stuff that we played on?
I have no idea why.
Now Roseanne Barr's mad at us. What the hell did we do? I was on vacation.
Well, if you said it the first time, you probably should have said
it the
first time.
You said it. You say things that get me in trouble. I love Roseanne. Now I'm
going
to get a call. Sorry. What did you say?
Uh-oh. What did I do? Uh-oh.
I don't know. Who wrote me this? Anne said Roseanne Barr and Stephanie Miller show Twitter freak out.
Oh, no.
Dear Steph, Roseanne Barr tweeted, after the Stephanie Miller show, Stephanie and her male cohort continued the lefty smear against me, crazy, irrelevant, a joke candidacy. I think you said that. I love Roseanne. Roseanne, I love you.
I don't listen
Stupid
to the
mooks.
Entire show that I put on. I just mooks. Don't have that kind of time. I'm sorry.
You obviously suggested her campaign was less than a serious campaign for president.
You're actually making
How dare
fun
you?
Of Judy Tenuta making fun of Roseanne Barr.
I think that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. I'll let you. You know what? I'm just going to call forward to you.
Great.
Ow! I was going to send you macadamia nuts for Christmas. Forget it.
I'm sure she loves that impression that you do
she
of
does.
Her.
She loves it. She loves it. I do it every time. All right. Speaking of things that happen on vacation, you know what I realized, Jim? Baby wipes are magic. Baby wipes are magic.
I thought you said baby whites. I think you did say baby
whites. Yeah.
Oh, I hope that won't be used against me in an unfortunate way on the YouTube.
Racist.
When they're looking for those, the left is more racist than the right clips.
There you go.
I'll go down in the annals of Bill Bennett radio history.
I do know that it's true that if you wanted to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down.
And now,
Stephanie Miller.
Baby whites are magic. not so much the blacks. That's not what I said. It was an unsolicited testimony because I went on a bike trip. You know the only thing that gets bike grease off your leg?
Baby wipes.
Baby wipes. Who knew? Because I've never had
a baby.
No. Sharon writes, baby wipes.
Legs? What?
Baby wipes are the shizzle.
They are.
It's true. Mm. Steph, heard you talking about how you discovered baby wipes while vacationing in Italy. I have a girlfriend that swears by them. She used to have a much younger paramour with whom she would rendezvous late at night. She never went to meet him without baby wipes on hand.
This much younger paramour
a baby?
A very young paramour?
It's for a different kind of cleanup.
Sure.
In fact, she suggested they should be called whore wipes. Just a suggestion. Thanks.
Wow.
For that.
Yeah. They're quite handy for that kind of cleanup.
We have more details?
Okay, I'm not. You know what? I don't even want to go any further with what both of you just said right there. Okay, so I'm going to pretend I didn't hear it. Donna in Texas or Kansas. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
Hi.
Just wanted to tell you, my brother Jerry and I, we watch you all the time ever since you came on.
Aw, thank you.
And we've been watching Current since they had the Rotten Tomatoes show.
That's right.
Wow. You're an old-timer. Okay.
Yeah. Calling about the Bush tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
I think Harry Reid should stick that old Bush tax cuts thing up on a shelf over a trash can and tell the Republicans that you either cut the middle class and raise the rich, or we're just going to push that thing off the shelf and...
Oh, let us go off the fiscal cliff like a bunch of lemmings. Mm-hmm. Yes, the president on the...
We should all agree to extend the tax cuts for the middle class. Let's agree to do what we agree on. That's what compromise is all about.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. And by the way, before you call job creators, hello, Stephanie, I am a job creator,
uh-huh.
And I have some concerns about the president's policies.
This isn't about taxing job creators. This is about helping job creators. I want to give them relief. I want to give those 97% a sense of permanence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're a job creator, Stephanie.
Well, a couple of crappy little jobs, but still, every little bit helps.
There you go.
Romney's a job creator in China.
Sure.
Go. Ken in New York, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Ken.
Stephanie, it's nice to see you back.
Thank you. Me too.
Boys, you too.
Aww.
Thank you.
Hey, I want to be the official Vietnam veteran progressive job creator in the Adirondacks.
Wow.
Oh, hello. I went to summer camp in the Adirondacks.
Yeah, well, it's the woods, you know? It's a great place to be.
Camp Lost Lake. Hated it.
We're going to be making a lot of craft beer up here, so I'll be sending you guys some.
Yay.
Okay, yay. All right, go ahead.
Hey, it's not the issue, 30 million plus unemployed. The mandate was, you know, that was just something they latched onto when Clinton was arguing for basically Medicare for all, just to have an opposing position. They're just boxed into that corner right now. That's all it is. And the same thing with minimum wage. I mean, Australia's minimum wage is $16 an hour. 38-hour week, that's a living wage.
Yeah, Ken, we were just saying, Jim, where is it that they just lowered the
Scranton, Pennsylvania.
To minimum wage for everybody. Cops, firefighters, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Everybody who works for the
city.
Yeah, good luck if your house is on fire.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, we would get this faster. You know, we don't have enough for gas.
Yeah.
Norma in Arizona, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Norma.
Hi, Stephanie. How you doing
today? Good. Go ahead.
Excellent. Well, I'm calling for two very important reasons. One is the headline on the Arizona Republic today says that Governor Brewer, is weighing her options in opting out of the Medicaid expansion.
Right. Yep.
I want to give her phone number at 602-542-4331. Everyone in Arizona needs to call Governor Brewer's office and urge her to expand the Medicaid, as actually the voters told her to do back in 2000.
Well, she's pointing a bony finger in their face.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
So you're not getting Medicaid. I am above the bone finger. If Chris Christie were weighing his options... She misspoke.
You need
a
truck scale. But, yeah.
You got to pull off the highway for that. Okay. Lori in Connecticut, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Lori.
Hey, Steph. I just wanted to refer back to the woman who was talking about the possibility of Romney being elected and the Republicans wanting to repeal the law that mandates that people who show up at emergency rooms without health insurance must be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who signed that bill into law years ago? Which president signed that into law?
I'm going to say Reagan.
There you go.
It
was in response to all the people who were being, you know, just left outside emergency rooms to die because they didn't have health insurance.
Yes, thank you. Okay, that's back when we were all human. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine. Well, I'm walking on
Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2. The phone number toll free from anywhere. Comedian Michael McDonald on his way up. We'll be live in studio here in just a few minutes. What a show this morning. I mean, could it get any more interesting? Well, I...
For Current TV, our good friend, David Schuster.
As if Tuesday isn't exciting enough, David Schuster coming up.
He is the most interesting man in the world.
For me, neither. And neither do you, Mr. Shiny and New. Hi, David Schuster. I'm good. I missed you last week. I did, except that the only news channel you can get in Italy is Fox News. And so it's good to be back and talking to a real newsman. So let's talk about the swing states poll. Because obviously we hear this every election year, right, that it always comes down to the battleground states, yada, yada, yada. And it, so far it looks like these, amid the barrage of ads, Obama is winning on that front thus far, yeah?
Yeah, no, he's doing well, and I actually think some of his latest ads, he has an ad up called I Believe, which talks about Mitt Romney outsourcing jobs while the president's been insourcing, and I think it's one of the most effective ads that I've seen this cycle, and perhaps in the last, 4 or 5 years. It's really done well, and I think it's certainly moved the needle in all the states where they're running it, and they're running it primarily in the battleground states, although I also saw the ad on ESPN the other night, which was kind of strange, but it's effective, and it's far more when you look at the Obama ads compared to some of the ads that Mitt Romney is now running. Hats off to Obama because his ad makers are doing a really phenomenal job.
Well, USA Today is saying at this point Obama the clear winner in the ad wars among swing state voters who said the ads have changed their mind about a candidate rather than just confirm what they already thought. 76% now support the president versus 16% favoring Romney. David, how much of that is, according to one pollster in here, it says it's expected to find out that more voters say their views have changed about Mitt Romney. They simply didn't know him all that well.
Yeah, and that gets to, I think, the heart of the strategy for the Obama campaign all along, and that we've seen, we talked about it before, and that to the extent that this is a referendum on the Obama presidency, that's bad news, given the handling of the economy, the perceptions that people have that the economy is not where it needs to be. So the challenge for President Obama has been to try to define Mitt Romney and really make this a choice. And I think they've done a very effective job of sort of defining Mitt Romney, explaining who he is before Mitt Romney has a chance to do so. And the two ways that I see it is, never mind the sort of the insourcing, outsourcing comparison, and also the fact that Mitt Romney's, very sort of wealthy. But I think the whole sort of message President Obama started to lay out in a speech the other week where he said, look, we have a fundamental disagreement, and that is I believe that we grow the economy, we help America by investing in middle class, investing in our future and education and infrastructure and providing all that sort of things. And Mitt Romney believes that the way to grow the economy is to give all the breaks to the wealthy and hope that it trickles down. And I think that's a very sort of clear distinction, clear message that people can understand. And I think it's also, it's also spot on. And the fact of the matter is that trickle-down economics has not worked. And to the extent the Obama campaign is able to tie Mitt Romney into that, I think it moves the numbers, particularly for voters in the middle who may not be paying so much attention right now.
Well, I love what Jim Messina, Obama's campaign manager, said. He said, we gave them new information. Romney has been out there claiming success as governor. But, the ads, I think the truth is always most powerful. It just says, take a look at his record on job creation, both in Massachusetts and as the head of Bain. I mean, that's all fair game, right?
Yeah, and it's, the fact of the matter is that, job creation got worse in Massachusetts. And Mitt Romney likes to say, well, that's because there was a trend line before I became governor of Massachusetts. Well, if that's the fact of the matter, then you got to accept that the trend line when President Obama took office was, right, thanks to George W. Bush, was not good. And so, Romney can't have it both ways. He can't blame the economy on President Obama if he's not willing to accept responsibility for the economy that he had in Massachusetts. And it just, so I think the Obama campaign is caught Romney talking out of both sides of his mouth again, and his campaign talking out of both sides of his mouth, and it's, it's effective. And I think people get the sense that not only is Mitt Romney sort of different from you and I because of his, gazillions of dollars, and he's sort of out of touch, and he gets the jet ski on vacations when a lot of Americans can't take vacations. Never mind all of that, but Mitt Romney just seems like he's just a very sort of different sort of character who's uncaring about the middle class and uncaring about giving Americans some sort of safety net, and I think that resonates.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I'm curious whether you think he's going to be able to get away with not releasing his tax returns. Jim was talking about the headline today. Mitt Romney says he knows nothing about his offshore investments.
What's a blind trust?
Well, how would I know? Really blind. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe
blind
because he deaf. Hasn't. Maybe because he hasn't bought one of those islands in the Bahamas yet. So, I mean, I think it's sort of reached a point where I think most of the media, and I, you know, some of my colleagues and talking to some of them, I think people sort of felt like, you know, for part of the spring, fine, he's not going to release his tax returns, you know, April, whatever. But there does come a certain point where this reaches a tipping point, and I think we've reached it. And I think a lot of members of the media are picking up on the fact that, wait a second, you saw this great column by Paul Krugman the other day where he compared Mitt Romney with his father, and his father released 12 years of tax returns and whatnot. And didn't take advantage of certain tax breaks that he could have taken advantage of, and you compare that with the son, and I think you have a lot of members of the media who are saying, okay, Mitt Romney has danced around this long enough. We are now just, you know, 4 months away from this election. We're about to start heading into this very intense cycle. You must do this. You must release your tax returns, or else you're going to pay a price. And if Romney feels like, okay, you know, there was nothing wrong, that he followed the letter of the law on his tax returns, that's fine. He should just release the documents, release all the returns, let people pour through them. Do it on a Friday night so that, you know, we ruin the weekend of the reporters, however you want to do it, but he's got to be transparent.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, that, you know, if you want to, he just said today that there's nothing in the things that I'm hiding. you know, and meanwhile, I hear all these stories floating around that they wrote off a birthday party for their dressage horse, and if they want to put those rumors to rest.
So he is kind of transparent.
Or, you know, put it out there and explain it. Say, okay, this may look kind of funny that I'm writing off, you know, business as a business expense, my wife riding around on these horses that we teach them how to dance or whatever the dressage thing is. That, explain it. I mean, put it out there and, you know, have the courage to go up and say, okay, this is why I did it. And this is, you know, you could say, you know, the tax code allows me to do this, and here's why. And so I'm not going to penalize myself. I'm going to do the same as any other American would, and that is I'm going to try to, you know, use every advantage I have and instruct my accountants to do the same. But at least have the courage to do that. Stand up and say, this is what I did, and this is why I did it. I think when Americans start to see him hiding behind things and say, well, I'm not going to release that, or I don't know much about what was in the Bahamas, or I've never, you know, I don't really know about my Swiss bank accounts except, you know, for all the money that I make off of them. I mean, it doesn't pass the laugh test.
Right, right. Well, and you know, don't you think, both politically and because it's the right thing to do, it's a good time for the president to be having this discussion about the Bush tax cuts, which is,
once again,
only about the Mitt Romneys of the world, only about the top 1%, right?
Well, and I just thought that was sort of a brilliant stroke. I mean, a lot of, you know, progressives have criticized the president as, okay, he's a horrible negotiator, and that, you know, the president, instead of sort of starting with the left position, he starts in the center, and then he ends up compromising to the right. Well, yesterday, and his sort of announcement that, okay, no, it's going to be $250,000 and less, that that's the benchmark, as opposed to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who are already saying, no, let's let the Bush tax cuts continue for everyone up, making up to $1 million. That's more of a centrist position, but I was like, wow, for the first time in 4 years, we've seen the president stake out a beginning negotiating position that is actually pretty hard line, and the compromise position might end up being, okay, we'll let the Bush tax cuts continue for people making up to $1 million, but we will let them evaporate for people making more. That's better than starting with that position when you're negotiating with Republicans, because they don't want to, you know, raise the taxes, have taxes raised at all. So I just thought, wow, finally the president has gotten it. He's being something of a, you know, hard ass on this, and it's about time.
He's, as Jim says, he's going more Ving Rhames and less Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Let's talk about health care for a minute. Senator Dick Durbin said it yesterday.
Let's get down to the bottom line here. Mitt Romney is the Obamacare daddy. He gave birth to this baby up in Massachusetts, and now he doesn't recognize it.
He's a baby daddy.
Yeah.
In your history of reporting, David Schuster, was that the worst muddle ever last week from the Romney campaign on health care and the mandate?
Yeah, it was really strange. I mean, Romney basically goes through and ticks off all the different aspects that people like. That is, you know, women shouldn't pay more for their health insurance, and people who are younger than 26 should be able to stay on their parents' plans, and people who have pre-existing conditions shouldn't be kicked off.
What good ideas?
He supports all of that. Well, that's great. How are you going to support it? Well, he won't say. And the fact of the matter is, you know, when he does say, oh, we got to repeal all of Obamacare, as he calls it, I mean, then he's basically contradicting himself. Like, in the same paragraph of his news conference, of his speech, he's contradicting himself. And I sometimes think, you know, I've got some friends on the Republican side who are probably, you know, scratching their heads thinking Mitt Romney just should not have a press conference and have one that bad and have one that silly and that stupid. And better just to say nothing than to be that convoluted and that crazy about it.
Yeah. I was on vacation. Even for the Romney campaign, that was spectacular, I thought.
Yeah, and you get the sense that, you know, Romney, I mean, you know, that all the Democrats need to do, I mean, you know, look, they're running, the Obama campaign's running a smart campaign, but I think they're certainly being helped by, you know, Romney as a candidate, and you're starting to hear a lot of rumblings by this and from people on the Republican side that Romney is not a good candidate. He's not disciplined. He tends to overthink or overspeak, and he makes these sort of bizarre statements that it's like Romney's logic is different from everybody else's logic, and he doesn't even realize that he's being illogical or that he's contradicting himself, and he just sort of thinks, oh, everybody will sort of understand what I'm saying. And, you know, it takes a certain kind of discipline as a politician to be able to stick within your sort of talking points and keep things within your sort of lane. Romney doesn't do that, and it feels like, you know, every week or two, we're getting one of these doozies, and
right.
It's just, you know, it's wonderful
well,
to cover
his he's tricked to Obama's Spock.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when you have Speaker Boehner even saying, he said, he was at a fundraiser in West Virginia. He told someone in the question and answer session that Americans are not likely to fall in love with Romney and that no one would be voting for him as opposed to voting against President Obama, aside from some friends, relatives, and fellow Mormons.
Oh, dear.
Yikes.
Well, and you know, the measure that I always have is I sometimes feel like, look, if a candidate gets along well with the press corps that's covering him, which is, you know, it's not that difficult to do. You bring them some donuts, you become accessible, and even if you hate their guts, you know, it's something you have to do if you're going to run for president of the United States. You have to sort of try to charm the press that's covering you. Romney has done nothing of the sort. In fact, he's done the opposite. He's antagonized the press corps covering him in so many different ways. I've never heard reporters speak in such negative personal terms about the person they're covering as I've heard reporters covering Romney speak about him.
Wow.
I mean, it is just poisonous, the relationship between Romney and the press corps covering him. And to me, that suggests that, okay, this is a guy who doesn't even get the basics of what he needs to do politically.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not willing to try
are.
To charm the press corps, this is a guy who's completely tone deaf.
Yeah, I mean, it's hilarious. The Boehner's comments were a direct response to someone asking, can you make me love Mitt Romney? He flatly answered no. Adding, no one's likely to do that. And then you just picture him face planting in his scotch. I mean, it's really.
Who the hell likes Romney? Nobody. Oh.
He may be the worst candidate ever.
Yeah, and then I was, you know, saying there was I think the NBC Wall Street Journal poll that came out the other week that said, okay, who would you rather be on an airplane ride with, you know, for long hours? And, you know, Obama wins that one by like 28 points. And that ought to be, you know, a sign of incredible concern for Republicans in that, sure, people may feel like Obama hasn't done as great a job with the economy as they should have, or there may be gap concerns about health care, his management economy, whatever. But when the personal likability is that different, I mean, those are all the moderates and independents who are, you know, going to make up their mind at the last minute, sort of a gut feeling. And if Obama's winning by 28 points on personal likability, Obama's going to win most of those moderates and independents. And that is, you know, great news for the Democrats, and that's horrible news for the Republicans. The Republicans don't have much time to try to figure this one out.
It's the old, who would you rather have a beer with? But a flight, that's a lot longer than a beer. So that's even better, right?
Exactly. You know, well, but I think a lot of Americans will be drinking a lot if they've got to be sitting next to Mitt Romney on a long flight.
I picture that old woman in airplane sitting next to Robert Hayes if you had to sit next to Mitt Romney for an entire flight. All right. David Schuster from Current TV, the most interesting man in the world. Miss
Stephanie,
you, honey.
You're the best. Look forward to seeing you later this summer.
You too. Love you, honey. All right. Oh, yeah. The DNC. Yeah, yeah.
If it's going to be based on likability, it's Kennedy Nixon all over again.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. 19 minutes after the hour, comedian extraordinaire Michael McDonald live in studio right there when we return on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Sweet Lady Gaga, that is good.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Oh, God, those hypnotic blue eyes burning a hole into my soul. There he is, Michael McDonald.
Hooray!
Comedian extraordinaire, formerly of Mad TV and now of everything.
And the Doobie Brothers. Oh,
yes.
No, that's the other guy. Yeah.
Well-known director. Now we're on television. Would you like to direct them in the current control room?
I would.
Is this satisfactory?
Soft lighting.
we've been asking for that.
Yeah.
This is not over 40 lighting.
You shouldn't have to squint to do radio.
Good morning, Michael McDonald.
Good morning. Thank you for having me in your beautiful home.
You gave me a copy of your DVD, Model Citizen.
Yep.
In which you're in a really weird. What is that stance
it's
a about?
Model. It's called Broken Doll. And if if you know anything about Tyra Banks, she will tell you how to do Broken Doll from a little show called America's Next Top Model.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's like, what am I thinking of? That's like a Zoolander. That's what that is.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. I guess there's a little bit of it.
Okay.
You do that very well.
It's really.
Thank you.
It's disturbing. Thank you for that.
She's broken lots of things. Tyra Banks.
I don't look alive. I look stuffed.
Neither does Tyra Banks. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Dead eyes. Right. I believe that's the new thing in modeling.
Yes.
Dead eyes. Show me corpse.
Broken, dull, dead eyes.
That's why you must see Michael McDonald live, because you get that sort of physical comedy. It just does not translate on the radio.
That's right.
He will be at all this month. You're everywhere. San Jose Improv, All American Comedy Club in San Diego, The Parlor Live in Seattle, The Roxy in L.A.
Yes, I'm going to finish my tour up with a little stint in L.A., and I almost never do stand-up in L.A., so I'm looking forward to it.
Fabulous. Now, you've been obviously directing, producing, writing on Cougar Town.
Yes. I'm like a floater at a restaurant.
Yes.
You know, hey, go clean that. Go bust that table. No.
No.
Oh,
all
Stephanie.
Right. Now,
it's early.
It's moving to TBS, right?
Yeah, Cougar Town will be going to TBS with original episodes, and they'll probably, hopefully rerun them into the ground, which would be great. Because
awesome.
Cha-ching.
Could could Jim come visit so he can perv out on Courtney Cox?
Yeah, you can.
He's all about the Cougars.
Sure, and she has given me full license to just grant dates to people.
Good,
anybody who would like one.
Great.
But she's come on by. She's an awesome girl.
Yeah. This is what I've heard. Now, I did not know this. You've appeared on every single season of Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D-List.
Have I?
Apparently.
Well,
according
about
to
that?
Your bio, yes.
Yes.
According to what I wrote in third person about myself.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's not true. I didn't write. I don't recall writing that, but I may have been drunk. Yeah, I've done a few of those. We're old friends.
She is blurbed here on the front of Model Citizen, as funny as he is wrong, and he's all kinds of wrong.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if Kathy Griffin calls you wrong, then you've got to be right.
Yes.
In what ways are you wrong?
I think mostly about, what I think is funny is generally
wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Because and we wrong
love
is
that.
Funny.
And we love that.
Don't you wish your boyfriend was wrong like Michael McDonald? Don't you wish he was a freak like Michael McDonald? How are you enjoying this election year?
I have sort of tuned out, I think. You know, that how a lot of people that summer, they sort of, leave in May, go away in May?
Right.
Right.
I have not really been paying much attention at all.
Well,
so how about
here,
that?
Time to tune back in. This is what happened just last week on the, it was like whether the mandate is a tax or a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
This was the Romney campaign just in the space of a week when I was gone.
The mandate was not a tax. It was a penalty.
If you can afford to buy insurance, then buy it. You don't have to if you don't want to buy it, but then you got to put enough money aside that you can pay your own way. Because what we're not going to do is say, as we saw more and more people in this country doing,
you've put imposed tax penalties in Massachusetts.
Yeah, we said,
don't buy it.
If people can afford to buy it, either buy the insurance or pay your own way. Don't be free riders and pass on the cost of your health care to everybody else.
Governor Romney said in 2009 in a USA Today op-ed when he said, using tax penalties as we did or tax credits as others have proposed, encourages free riders to take responsibility for themselves rather than pass their medical costs on to the others. This doesn't cost the government a single dollar.
The governor has consistently described the mandate in Massachusetts as a penalty. The mandate was not a tax.
Okay.
The governor believes that what we put in place in Massachusetts was a penalty, and he disagrees with the court's ruling that the mandate was a tax.
The majority of the court said it's a tax, and therefore it is a tax.
Well,
they
that's not what, you what is said. The RNC's position on this?
Well, our position is the same as Mitt Romney's position. It's a tax. That's the only way that the Supreme Court came up with the decision that it did in order to make it constitutional.
But it
otherwise,
sounds like Camp Romney says it was a penalty, so I'm just asking you specifically, Republican National Committee, tax or penalty? Which is
it's a tax.
It's now clear that his mandate, as described by the Supreme Court, is a tax.
The mandate was not a tax. It was a penalty.
Yeah, it's no wonder you tuned that out.
Now you're up to date.
What were you just playing?
Mike McDonald will explain if there's a difference between free riders and floaters as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
The trouble is
Stephanie Miller
struggles with technology of any kind. I mean, remotes, cell phones, computers.
It's true.
True that. Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour. Comedian Michael McDonald owner of the bluest eyes and the longest eyelashes I've ever seen on a man outside of Clarice in the Christmas special. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Okay.
I like that reference.
No, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. No, I didn't. That was right. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Okay.
Is that the bell specifically from The Price is Right?
I'm not really sure.
No, you know what that's from? It's from Match Game. I actually recorded that from Match Game and put it together.
I love that show.
I'm frequently not really even aware what's in my own box.
Brett Summers is in your box.
Pardon me?
Brett Summers is in your box.
And Charles Nelson Hartley.
Is it box? Is it box or is it a tax?
Pardon me. Is it a free rider or a floater, Michael McDonald? What's the deal?
I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say free rider.
Okay. Good. Good.
I got it.
Good. You get that. Okay. Representative Javier Becerra.
Javier Becerra.
Uh-huh.
Why are we going backwards talking about what was already done, litigated, debated, passed, and also affirmed by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, they're still arguing. They voted for the 31st time Republicans to repeal health care.
They're going to vote tomorrow.
Which is not going to happen.
No.
Right. Well, it'll be the 31st time tomorrow.
Right.
Wow. They're like a condom with a hole in it. Okay. Governor
I was going to say dog with a bone.
Right.
But I guess dog with a condom in
useless,
a hole.
Useless.
A dog with a condom in a hole.
A bone
with a condom.
But that's a dog bone I'm talking about.
All right. Okay, you know what? We're not at the Groundlings, okay?
Are we bleeping
okay.
me? Have any of my words made
we're
it?
We're improvising here. We're playing a word game. I don't know. Okay, Governor Chris Christie.
Wait, don't tell me.
Well, we don't trust this administration, and we don't trust Washington, D.C.
No, that's Rick Perry. I wanted Chris Christie, Governor Chris Christie.
Okay.
This is the arrogance of the federal government. Like, they believe that down here they can craft a program that's going to work for everybody.
Like Medicare, you mean?
That's Chris Christie talking about arrogance, the guy that generally, like, just closes news conferences whenever he wants to. Does it not always look like a scene from The Sopranos when you watch his news conference? We're done here.
Bada boom.
That guy's an idiot. Boom. Yeah, he just did that when we were on vacation.
What I like about it, at least it's not the hem-ha. Well, I'm trying to think right now about what I want to say, but I don't want the words to come out in a way that would be controversial, so I'll just keep talking around about it. At least he'll, go to hell.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Screw
you. And don't forget the S.
You're
going to
be sleeping with the fishes.
Senator Jeff Sessions, a Republican of Alabama, who came out of his little tiny tree, took a pause from making cookies to say this.
We must repeal it, and we will repeal it.
Oh, well, then he went back into his tree.
And then I'm going to go make some more cookies.
Is he elfin?
He is.
Yeah. He has tiny little elfin ears.
He's got the...
Yeah. It just couldn't be cuter.
How do you have all those things just at a fingertip?
In
are you making
box.
Them with a, in your box?
Yes.
Yes, they're all in her box.
All those sounds are from her box.
Just like Jeff Sessions makes cookies.
In a tree.
I make those in my box. Okay. Yeah, this is a question we've been asking all morning. Is can Mitt Romney run for president without actually giving us any specifics about anything? Romney's vague policy vision worries conservatives because he's not really Bill Kristol, who Jim is frequently
wrong about everything ever.
Yeah. Ever in the history of anything.
Anything.
Ever.
He's the right kind of wrong or the wrong kind of wrong?
No, the wrong kind of wrong.
All right.
He said, I don't think you can beat an incumbent president even if the economy is slow, as 27% of voters, according to a recent poll, think you, as the challenger, don't have a clear plan for improving the quality. He doesn't give any specifics. He's just like, it'll just be
it's just bad.
I'm going to make things better.
Yeah.
Right. The Wall Street Journal editorial board tore into Romney last week for trying to play it safe and coast to the White House by saying the economy stinks and it's all Mr. Obama's fault, arguing instead Romney needs to offer some understanding of why the president's policies aren't working and how Mr. Romney's policies will do any better. They were saying almost every issue they went through, they're designed to avoid getting specific at any cost.
I believe in goodness and niceness.
Right, and puppies and flowers.
Yeah,
it seems
fair to know what... If somebody wants a job, they should say... It's sort of like if I was applying for a job at a fast food restaurant and I just said, I would like the job.
Right, because I will make things better.
I will
better.
Do just a good job.
Better.
Well, all right, and it would be odd.
Right. I won't spit in the coffee much.
I think his next speech was going to be just the words from These Are a Few of My Favorite Things.
Kittens and rainbows.
Puppies on strings.
That's what I like. That's my plan.
These are a few of my favorite things, and you will have them under our Romney administration.
Unless you don't want them, and then I won't give them to you.
Mice and,
but
mice
I, either way, am I covered?
Mice and pretty pajamas? Yeah.
Yeah. On toadstools.
On toadstools, yes.
Yeah.
Unicorns farting glitter? Yes.
Leprechauns farting glitter?
Sure.
Stephanie.
Yes.
Where's that coming from?
From her box.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it wasn't. Was that, I'm sorry. Was that me? I'm sorry.
There's a word for that, but I won't say it.
Please don't.
Wait, is that even a bleepable word?
I don't think you're allowed to say it on the air.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Dana and Marilyn.
There's a word.
Yes. Dana and Marilyn, you're on with Michael McDonald. Hey, Dana.
Hi, Michael. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Good. How was vacation?
It was fabulous. Go ahead.
Okay. Everybody had a good time?
Ah.
Yeah, Michael's indeed dreamy and hilarious. Great combination.
Yes.
Hilarious.
Great combination.
I wish you ran the studio.
Oh, he's adorable. I miss Mad TV. It's hilarious. Okay, so my comment is I saw Barney Frank this morning on the Bill Press Show.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about his wedding a little bit. And Bill brought up something Jan Brewer said and about, you know, not extending health care for gay couples or married gay couples, what have you. And, you know, he said, and this is a brilliant guy, I feel, and he just said, well, she's just mean. And, you know, it's very simple to say that, but there's some women out there that are mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Baby Cannon last night, and he just with a knot in her shorts, you know, just going crazy.
Yeah.
And,
Dana,
you know, because they can't do anything else but get pissed.
Yeah. Dana, I hosted Equal Time with Baby Cannon for a year, and I think she started almost every sentence with, once again, you have your facts wrong, Stephanie. Let me explain it to you.
It's pretty much it. She's so angry and so bitter. And she compared having Swiss hidden bank accounts and, you know, Cayman Islands. She compared it to having stock in Toyota.
Oh, boy.
It's just asinine. So.
Yeah, I know. My favorite thing, Michael, is I used to do little skits, which really don't fit on a CNBC show.
No.
They don't?
That was...
They let me do little skits, and the funniest part, it was like a Mad TV sketch. The camera would cut back to Bay after and she just looked like she sat on the cactus. She was like,
actually, there's nothing funnier to me than bombing, whether I'm bombing or watching somebody else
just
bomb.
Just an audience of one, and she just hated me.
Just somebody not appreciate you is sometimes a very delightful thing.
And she added, and your little dog, hell. Yeah, Baby Cannon has no sense of humor at all.
It was during the Clinton thing, and we used to do a lot of green screen because that's what we could really like afford. So it would be like me next to Monica trying to get President Clinton's attention. Hilarious news-based skits. They just laugh and laugh.
But wait, now, because like some people are different on camera versus their real life. You know, like a lot of people say Howard Stern is actually a sort of a warm puppy dog off camera or whatever.
Right.
Was she that way off camera, too?
Yes.
You know
although,
what, though?
We just saw her at the RNC, and she couldn't have been nicer to me. I don't know what's happening.
And you know what? We had her as a guest on this show, and she was rather delightful.
Yes. Sometimes, you know, the years, Michael, it melts away.
And she's had many, many years.
What?
We
now
all
you're,
have.
Now you're going to have me have an awkward RNC again this year, aren't you?
Almost as many procedures as Stephanie.
What?
No, that's not true.
Yes, it is true. What are you talking about? All right. Oh, my God. Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes have already settled their divorce.
Yes, they have.
What? What could
it's
that
great.
Be about?
I love every settling. It's great.
What could that be about? Is he afraid some sort of...
They've agreed not to talk about
embarrassing information would come out.
They've agreed not to talk about religion.
Oh, really?
Yes,
and probably some other things.
Oh.
But you know, isn't that the way to do it? Like, just shut it down.
Real quick,
shut it down.
Well,
do we really need to know?
The way Katie brought this up, it seemed like there was going to be a huge court fight.
Right.
No.
Yes, they were saying that TMZ reported in the last few days lawyers for both sides were in a marathon negotiation trying to end what began as a divorce war. You're right.
Yeah.
War of the Roses.
Mm-hmm.
War of the Tomcat or whatever.
Something.
Something Michael McDonald would direct. I don't know. one condition Tom had for setting was meaningful, significant contact with Suri, which I don't know what that means. Maybe he still gets to hook her to an e-meter or something.
Maybe Mitt Romney will be able to... parse that out. I don't know.
Possibly.
But just keep it. It's vague. It sounds good.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know who you do not ask about Tomcat? Nicole Kidman.
Oh.
Do not.
No.
If you
don't speak.
Does she just dive into a hole? Like whenever that subject comes up, I almost feel like the Tomcat thing is like it's like Russia and the U.S. in the 50s. Just like
I don't.
We could blow each other to smithereens, or we could walk
okay.
away.
All right.
That's what they. Yeah. They walk away.
Drop the gun. Yep. Walk away.
Yep. All right. You got it. I got. Look what I got. What do you got? All right.
We used to
and
do,
shut
they
it down.
They could have gone nuclear.
We used to do bits of, about Tom and Katie all the time and always end with Katie going, help me. Please help me. But she helped herself.
I was going to say. Yeah. I mean, how
somebody
about that?
Somebody finally answered her call.
Yeah.
Dad. Jim, I don't know if this is a conspiracy sausage, but Gawker writing, there are lots of similarities between the Tom Cruise-Katie Holmes divorce and the Tom Cruise-Nicole Kidman divorce. The age, 33. The custody battle, the allegation it was a sham marriage to begin with. But Nicole Kidman does not want to be dragged into this family.
Do you blame her?
No,
she's
moved on.
She's happy now, right?
Yes.
She wants to.
She's got Keith Urban.
Keith Urban.
Yes.
She's, which is an ironic name for a country star. Somebody named Urban.
Yes, exactly.
Never thought about
that. I had to watch your mouth make the words because I didn't understand it like I don't understand a lot of Australians. And that's what you're doing, right? Australia. I got
yes,
it.
Nice.
So.
Nothing but net for Michael McDonald. All right. 45 minutes after the hour. Back with the remaining segment with Michael McDonald.
Bloody eyes.
Comedic superstar as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Eek. I just spewed on my dashboard again. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, yeah. Stephanie Miller Show bringing the funk. Here we go. 49 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1 to the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Comedian extraordinaire, Michael McDonald. Yeah, we were really getting. We were off on our whole Mission Impossible theme on how did Katie escape?
I would like to know.
I'm just wondering if it was like Mission Impossible. She had to drop down like on a string, like just so not to set off any of the sensors. She probably used techniques that Tom Cruise used in Mission Impossible to get out of there.
There you go.
She had her own movie. She made.
She probably was thinking at the last second she was going to get hit by the tranquilizer dart in the back of the head by one of the snipers, right like this close to the exit. Just like,
I made it.
But she made it. She escaped. So good for her.
I was like a little sack of potatoes. Just.
And they've settled rather abruptly.
Yep.
Interesting.
All interesting. Just spitballing.
And she gets custody of Surrey, but he gets big-time...
Meaningful contact!
Yes. Big-time meaningful contact. And those restrictions get lessened as she gets older.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And how do you know that? Is that in the press?
That was in the press.
Ah.
We're in Hollywood. We're just all gossiping.
I know.
We can't help ourselves. Okay, speaking of Hollywood, I can't help myself. I don't think I've ever asked you this, and probably just to hate people pestering you. How did you come up with Stuart, the character from Mad TV? Was it based on somebody?
Little Dark Corners of the Past, Stephanie. No, I mean, it was kind of definitely the mom. Stuart and his mom is based on the relationship I have with my mom.
Hmm.
And my mom doesn't see any similarity, but it's absolutely true. And and I taught kindergarten for a year. Time to watch weird kids.
I would never ask you to pretend like you're afraid of the microphone like you're Stuart.
Oh, no.
It's hard to do this in the morning because I had some wine last night. Actually, I knew a kid in junior high school who talked like that because he was afraid of his voice changing, and so he got it artificially high in the
But if he'd laugh like this.
What
that is so weird.
Of his That's voice a Michael McDonald character.
Yeah, he was doing you before.
What was behind that? I don't understand.
I don't know. I didn't know what his thing was.
He had a hang-up.
Of some sort.
He
wanted a hang-up.
You know, when you start getting hair in certain places, it's very upsetting.
It's awkward.
All right. Now that we have Michael McDonald in studio, I love our fun stack stories that seem like they could become a skit.
Okay.
All right.
This is something out of Groundhog Day or woodchucks suspected of stealing cemetery flags. Whatever movie this is, Bill Murray's in it.
That's Caddyshack.
It's Caddyshack and Groundhog Day all... Yeah. Who would steal flags from Civil War graves? Authorities in Hudson, New York, believe they found the culprit in a rash of cemetery flag thefts. Woodchucks, who are also known as groundhogs.
How many flags would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck would chuck flags?
No.
Yeah. Groundhog. They must be Southerners.
Right.
Yes.
They were insane.
Right. The wall of northern aggression.
That's right.
Yes.
Around
75 flags are reported missing. They're probably having little Civil War reenactments down in their burrows. And they're like, we need some more flags.
General Woodchuck. What is it, Sergeant Woodchuck?
Well, sideburns came from General Burnside's. So
yes.
Maybe somebody chucked wood. Never mind. That's it.
All right. Could I have my Indian music, please? This you just don't hear every day.
Or American Indian?
No, you know what I mean.
Dot, not
feather. Our call center music. A man in India.
But it's any key.
I don't see a key that says any.
Not. You see it keys on your keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Any one of the keys. Press that and that will...
I don't understand.
There's okay. Not a key called any.
That's our little skit about me calling the call center. Okay. A man in India who had complained about eye irritation got a big surprise. So did his doctor. A live 5-inch worm.
Yeah.
Oh! In his eye.
Was found in his right eye.
In his eye.
It's worse than poison oak in your eye. That's
a five-inch?
Five-inch worm.
In his eye.
Curled up inside of his eye.
Doctor, never
do not
that?
Swim in the Ganges. No. I told you.
Something went wrong with the tequila that night. I'm telling you.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh.
Can he see? Did it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all fine.
It's just a worm in your eye.
Yeah.
You're fine now. That's it.
It's not as bad as a big pizza pie hitting your eye. Okay.
That's right.
Let's go to Liz in L.A. You're on with Michael McDonald. Hi, Liz.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You know, everybody looks back on Ronald Reagan and says, what a great president, a great this, great that. I was in California, I'm a native, when he was governor.
Yeah.
He closed many, many mental health hospitals.
Yeah,
that's how Stephanie got out.
Those people were put out on the streets. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, no help whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, maybe people with Alzheimer's, and here he had Nancy Reagan to wipe the drool off his mouth.
Dear. Liz. I hung up on her because my mom's watching, and I could feel the oh dear. Oh.
What you know what I
liberals
would like
are
to
so
do?
Mean.
She was winding up for some major stuff.
Yeah,
she
was. Oh yeah. I think we had to cut her off before that major stuff happened.
Oh, you know. I would love to just pick up the call now, and she's still going.
And then the two of them with their...
Okay, all right.
That's when the homeless population exploded, and they closed the state.
Yeah, that's right.
But that is definitely how you got out, right?
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Some of us got radio shows.
Yeah.
And we got to continue to sit in little padded rooms talking to ourselves and get paid for it.
You know that this isn't broadcasting.
Right?
There's no.
Is it like King of, it's like King of Comedy?
Yeah.
Yes,
are you guys cardboard?
Sometimes I look back at my life and I think.
Okay. Hey! Guess who else has a right-wing mom?
Who?
Brad Pitt.
Yeah, did you hear about this?
Gawker writes up, for those of us with family members prone to quasi-racist, half-coherent Thanksgiving dinner rants, it's a relief to know the rich and famous sometimes go through the same thing. Jane Pitt, please and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Brad's mom wrote a letter to the Springfield News Leader, which said, among other things, any Christian who does not vote or writes in the name is casting a vote for Romney's opponent, Barack Hussein Obama.
Oh, boy.
A man who sat in Jeremiah writes, oh, God's sakes, really? Church for years did not hold a public ceremony to mark the National Day of Prayer and is a liberal who supports the killing of unborn babies and same-sex marriage.
Well, she must love Brad's father-in-law.
Wow.
How about that? That's very American to have your parents be more conservative than you are.
Maybe they have like separate rooms for Thanksgiving. It's like, okay.
John Boyd and Jane Pitt, in there. Yeah.
You go to the crazy table. The rest of us will be... Yeah, because they're obviously big liberals. Brad and Angie, they're saying, you know, they weren't going to get married until gay people could get married and big Obama supporters, mm-hmm. You know. Just saying. Okay.
Well, you know what, though? She's been getting death threats.
Who?
Jane Pitt.
Oh, has she really?
Which is not good.
No, that's not good.
No, it's not. It's not.
No.
That we had to say that
way before.
See, he could never be a politician. He has taken a firm stance
against
death threats.
Death threats.
And anyone who
thank you.
Gives anyone a death threat should be burned at the stake.
I also could never be a politician because I have way too many skeletons.
No,
I've got a Halloween
clackety, clackety,
store
clackety.
In my closet.
Ooh, clackety, clackety. Yeah,
it's
me
like the
too.
Crypt keeper's house.
There's way too much tape on me.
Yeah.
Virtually any segment of tape from any year
can
torpedo my career on day one.
And hopefully something from today.
Yes. Clearly,
there were some,
you're a bad influence.
There were some bits from the 90s that,
got us knocked
off
the radio.
Let's not bring up Jesus Christ Superstud again. There's no reason for it.
And that's just Babe Buchanan's face,
yes.
That noise.
Michael McDonald, you have a lot of dates coming up, and I don't know
what's your rider.
I don't know what your demands are in your rider, but Madonna has a DNA sterilization team cleaning up after her on tour.
Cleaning? What? a sterilization team after her.
Yes, she scrubs her DNA. I don't know.
To scrub her DNA for everything.
So that the Nazis can't clone her in the future or something?
A sterilization team to wipe away any DNA that may have dropped in her room on a hair, skin, or saliva.
Or maybe I am for that because at least she's leaving her hotel room clean.
There you go.
There's just so much DNA being.
She's not, you know, like trash. She's not Charlie Sheen. Who only leaves DNA, DNA everywhere.
How do you find out things about Michael McDonald, for instance, when your dates are? Is there a MichaelMcDonald.com?
I'm on Facebook, and I am on, what's it?
Twitter.
On the Twitter.
Yes, at McDonald Comedy.
That's right.
All right, and you can see him live out here in California all month in July. We love you, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
Love you, Blue Eyes. All right, we'll see you tomorrow for Hump Days with Hal Sparks on The Stephanie Miller Show.